So we're going to be finishing up this at least for the time being, this idea of kingdom come. And we've been looking at this story about how Jesus went about really accomplishing the mission that he came for. We're going to talk in Christmas about why he came, but we've been talking about how he accomplishes that mission. And I want you to think about that for just a second. This is how Jesus went about telling the world about his plan. This is Jesus, the creator of everything. If he's going to come with a plan, his plan is going to be strategic. It's going to be purposeful. We have four accounts of what Jesus did. Four different ways of telling the story, some chronological, some organized by teaching, some organized in different ways, all with kind of different ideas of why they're telling the story. But we have four accounts of how the Son of God came and accomplished his mission here on earth. We get to see the strategy for how Jesus was going to unveil what it was like to love, to teach, to care, to heal, to live. We get four accounts about that. I've thought about that a lot this week, kind of been struck by that as I'm looking forward to Christmas a little bit, but still in the text that we're in and thinking through some things. I'm just struck by the fact that we have this kind of manifesto in front of us of how Jesus did things, how he unveiled the plan. And as much as we can go to certain verses and we can quote verses and we can learn from those verses, and absolutely we should do that, that's what we do every Sunday, taking a step back just a little bit and looking at how Jesus does things can sometimes be as instructive and profound as exactly what he did, how he chose to do it. And so this morning we're going to look a little bit about what he said, but we're also going to look a little bit at the way he did it. As we end chapter 10, we're kind of at this natural cutoff point in Matthew's narrative. As he's telling the story, the way he organizes things is kind of in certain blocks. So the first block was Matthew 1 through 4. That was the prologue. That's the birth story. That's Jesus. And before he begins his public ministry, that kind of sets everything up. That's 1 through 4. Matthew sets up his whole gospel and why he's telling the story in those chapters. Then in 5 through 7, we have the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus' first big block of teaching in Matthew's Gospel. And he lays out how his world is completely his kingdom that he's teaching about. We call that part the unexpected kingdom. It's completely different than anything we would do or anything we would personally set up. So that was 5 through 7. Then 8 and 9, we saw these miracles that Jesus did, the healing of the blind man, of the paralytic, of the centurion's servant, all those things. We saw these miracles that he did. And so Matthew kind of organizes in these categories. And then Matthew 10 is another block of teaching. It's just one chapter, but it's important what we've seen over the last few weeks. This is Jesus sending his disciples out. We call it Jesus' pregame speech. He's getting them ready to go out into the world. And as we said over and over, there's no emotional ploy here. There's just dead level honesty. He doesn't give the speech that I think you would probably give if you wanted to motivate people to go and tell your story and go out on mission for you. He doesn't give the speech, but he does something completely different. And then he ends today with something that I think is a little bit different as well. As he sends them out, he gives them an important message that they should see. As we've seen, Jesus does things unlike anyone else. He's honest. He's tough. He is unflinching in this call to the disciples. He doesn't back off one ounce. And he is no less than that for us today. In our call to follow him, he doesn't back off at all. He calls us to follow him, and it demands everything. We saw that last week. If you don't take up your cross and follow me, you're not worthy of me. Those are not just words that we hear. Those are not a cliche. Those are words that change people and demand everything from us. But in spite of these difficult words of persecution and struggle, he has a plan. He has a mission. And today we get to see how Jesus ends this talk to his disciples. We get to see what he ends with, how he kind of sends them out the door, right? How he kind of sends them out the locker room and says, all right, guys, let's roll. This is what we're going to do. And it's a beautiful picture of hope and assurance that carries a message that honestly I think might be, maybe, hopefully not as I go through this and kind of explain it because I think it's right there in the text. It may be one of the most controversial things I've ever said here at Providence. How's that for a tease? This is going to be something that I think might push some of you to think just a little bit. And so we'll get into that here in just a minute. And so let's read this text, and we'll want to consider a few things together. Matthew chapter 10, we're going to start in verse 37, and we're going to read all the way through the end of the chapter. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. And whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Whoever receives you receives me, and whoever receives me receives him who sent me. The one who receives a prophet because he is a prophet will receive a prophet's reward, and the one who receives a righteous person because he is a righteous person will receive a righteous person's reward. And then verse 42, and whoever gives one of these little ones even a cup of cold water because he is a disciple, truly I say to you, he will by no means lose his reward. So that's our text for the morning. So Jesus ends this speech on a bit of an odd note. At this point, we should expect that, right? After what we've seen so far in chapter 10, nothing lines up with what we would have done or what we would expect. So he ends in an odd note. If it's me, I send them out the doors with something like, the gates of hell will not prevail against the church, right? That's what you send people out the door with, right? Or you say, remember the power that you have that I am going to give you as you go. Like, that's how you send people out. He doesn't even tell them anything about how much he appreciates their sacrifice. Like, there's no note of encouragement there. No thank you. Thanks, guys, for being on board with me. I know this might cost you your life, but I really appreciate it. I mean, that's what I would be thinking. Like, guys, it's hard to stand up and call people to something that is going to require them to sacrifice. I'm telling you that now as a pastor. That is a hard thing for me to do. Even if I know that that sacrifice will ultimately bring you joy, it's hard for me to stand up here and say, I want you to give something up to be on this mission that we call Providence Church. It's hard for me to stand up and do that, let alone if I were to stand up and say, I want you to come be a part of this mission called Providence Church, and you're probably going to die. That's really hard. You want to talk about praying for people in the Middle East? Pray for those pastors. Pray for those people that are trying to make disciples there. Because they're saying, come be a Christian and die. Which is amazingly similar to exactly what Jesus said over and over and over again. So if I'm standing up and I'm asking you to come on mission with me and to sacrifice, I mean, honestly, if I'm asking you to serve in the nursery, I'm saying thank you like 10 times, right? Like, thank you so much for doing that. We appreciate that tremendously. That's just to serve in the nursery 12 times a year. So Jesus doesn't do that, though. There's no rally cry, no thank you. He really just kind of gives this cryptic encouragement at the end. That's how he sends them out. That's how he ends his talk. I wonder if it's something that you find encouraging, or if it's something that you just kind of blow right by. I think this morning, if we look at it, you'll find encouragement here. I grew up in a house where expectations were kind of high. The expectations for what we were supposed to do in life were pretty high. Now, don't get me wrong, this isn't the kind of like dogmatic, you know, you got to be just like this and, you know, rigorous, but it was... There were expectations in my household. I had a lot of chores to do, as far back as I can remember. I know Emily in high school, she would call me chore boy because I had so much to do at home, and she had a mom that stayed at home, and she didn't have to do anything. So she thought the fact that I had to clean my room would be like, whoa, that's a lot. But I really did have quite a few chores. So my mom and dad both worked, and so by the time that I was 12, I could mow, I could do the dishes, I could do laundry, I could vacuum, I could do basically anything that needed to be done in the house. And so I had to do those things. I got an allowance for it, but that's what I had to do. That was part of being in the house, and it was expected that for the most part the house would stay picked up, and it would mainly be my job to do it. Every Friday the house had to be vacuumed. That was the schedule. The yard needed to be mowed. I was the one to go and mow it. That's the way it worked. Grades were supposed to be good. I could make all A's and then make one B, and all we would talk about is why I made the B. Like, that's how things were in my house. Now, my parents were both encouragers. They were great, but that's how things worked. In sports, I wasn't expected to get a hit every time. I wasn't expected to be all world, but I was I sure better hustle. If I didn't hustle, I would hear that in a heartbeat. Like, that was the expectations. I had to give my all at all times. It's just how it was for me. And so I learned pretty quick at a fairly young age that encouragement was nice, but what really became the goal for me in all of these things is I began to realize that doing things well kind of had its own reward. If you do things with diligence and you do them well, it has its own reward. I didn't need to be lectured to do them right. I mean, I was a kid. Sometimes I had to be lectured to do them right. But honestly, for the most part, I didn't have to be lectured to do them right. The lecture wasn't really that motivating for me. It was the completion of the task that was done well that would become its own reward. And I knew that if I put the effort in to do it right, in the end, I would reap the benefits for that. I think Jesus is trying to convince the disciples that this principle is at play here. I think that's what he's trying to do. I'm trying not to read into this, but if you'll hang on with me, I think you'll see this. He's been pretty negative in his teaching so far. I mean, what we've seen in Matthew 10, he's not the most positive, encouraging guy. Jesus isn't here. You go back a few verses and you see Jesus emphasizing kind of the negative aspects, both of being a follower and not being a follower. But really what he focuses on is the negative, not the positive. He kind of lays out about what it would mean to follow him and lays out what it would mean to not follow him. Frankly, neither one of them really give us all that appealing results. And, you know, back in verse 32, 33, he says, "So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven." That's good. "But whoever denies me before men, I will deny before my Father in heaven." So you see him bringing out the negative there, just a couple of verses down in verse 37. "Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." So if you find your life for your sake, then you're going to lose it. It's going to be all for naught in the end. He emphasizes the negative. You got to take up the cross or you're not worthy of me. And he kind of dwells on that a little bit. He's not the most encouraging guy. At least not here, he's not. He's been pretty harsh. But we understand why, right? We've covered this pretty well the last few weeks. It's because what he's about to send out his disciples to do is not going to be easy. And he knows what's going to happen to them. So he doesn't need to fill them and puff them up with a bunch of like pie in the sky. "This is going to be great, guys. Aren't you so excited?" He lays it out and he says, "This is going to be hard." But I'm sitting here thinking, at this point, Jesus, you said all this. A little bit of encouragement would be helpful, at least for me. Like, just a little bit of encouragement. And so he gives them a little bit. But it's a little cryptic. Frankly, you can read half a dozen commentaries, and they're all going to tell you that this means something a little bit different, that the prophet he's talking about here is this, and that, you know, the little ones are this, and it's a little bit cryptic, and I don't want to get too hung up on those details, but I think in general we can see something that's at play, something that's very important for us this morning. He tells his disciples that they have a reward waiting for them, and so do the people that help them on this journey. Specifically, anyone that kind of opens their home or even gives such a simple gesture of hospitality as a cup of water, that these people will be rewarded. This is how Jesus ends the lesson. This is the pregame speech coming to a conclusion. And even though it seems simple and maybe not that obvious to us, there's a huge encouragement for us to see this morning. He wants us to see that there's a few things that can drive us to be better disciples. That as he sends us out, there's some important things that can make us a better disciple and can drive us to love God even more. So the first thing that we see is that Jesus was on mission. Jesus was on mission. I realize this sounds pretty simple, but we can't go by it without saying this. This is what we see in Matthew chapter 10 and the verse 40. "Whoever receives you receives me, and whoever receives me receives him who sent me." So Jesus lives his life as one who has been sent on a mission. And there is a ton that we could talk about. I could stop right there and we could spend a long time on that. In fact, we kind of are going to do that just a little bit. not this morning, but over the next few weeks. You see, Jesus was delivering this message to these men while standing on their soil and breathing in their air. This was God in the flesh, on earth, on mission. And he was there with these men, among these men, living with these men, walking the roads, eating meals with these men. Jesus was here doing that, and he had a mission to accomplish, and he knew where that mission ended. There was no question in Jesus' mind. From the moment that he stepped forward and said that I am on this mission, and he quoted Isaiah to the synagogue, from that moment he knew where he was going. And he knew that it ended in a cross. But he came anyway. And he walked our earth anyway. And he went on this mission strategically to get there anyway. He was sent. Jesus just read off this hard list of truths, right? He just read off this hard list in Matthew 10 about how hard everything is going to be and how hard it would be to be one of his disciples. And you know how Jesus knew it was going to be hard? Because he was living it first. He was going before these men, and he was doing it first. This is not some theoretical text that Jesus is giving. This is not some pie-in-the-sky philosophy that he's giving. This is not some just kind of, let me ponder a question with you. This is not Jesus. This is Jesus saying, I'm here with you, doing this with you, and I'm leading the way, and I'm going to take the first stones. He was here on mission, and he knew what it was going to cost him. He told these men these things about persecution that was coming while he was on the mission to the cross. I said that we could talk about all kinds of different things. We're going to be talking about, at Christmas, we're going to be talking about this idea that Jesus dwelled with us. You can go ahead and put that graphic up there. This is going to be our sermon series for Christmas. The idea that Jesus would come and put on flesh and dwell among us. That's what we're going to be talking about throughout the Christmas season. I'm excited about what we're going to be doing. I don't want to spend too much time belaboring this whole point about Jesus being here on mission, because we're going to talk about it for at least 4 weeks, and we'll see where it goes in this series we're going to call Dwell. But you can take a powerful lesson from this. Jesus is sending his disciples on mission while he himself was on mission. He knew the struggles and the pains. He knew what was going to happen. He knows them intimately. When you go through life, when you do things in life, you are not alone in your struggle. Jesus did not send you out without going before you. There's no untested theory here that Jesus is advocating. There's no philosophical question that he's trying to answer. He's calling people to do the same thing that he did, to take up your cross. I would love to spend the next 30 minutes drawing out the implications of that, but we're going to spend the next month drawing out the implications of that. So I'm going to move on just a little bit. So the first thing that we need to see that helps us be a better disciple is that Jesus was on mission. The second thing that we need to see is that Jesus had a mission for us. Again, maybe this seems simple, but I think it's something that's important. Just as Jesus is sent, we are sent too. Again, whoever receives me receives him, and him who sent me. He puts us on mission. That's what all of chapter 10 is about. He is on mission. That mission then transfers to us. We'll see in Matthew 28, the Great Commission. We'll see so many other texts where we are called to go on mission. He puts us on mission. He didn't come to call men to himself so that we could just sit at his feet, look up and marvel and gaze at him. We should do that. Oh my goodness, absolutely we should do that. We should marvel, we should learn, we should meditate, we should study, we should do all of those things when we think about the cross. But in doing that, we cannot stop there. It must propel us out on mission. When you choose to follow Jesus, part of what you receive in return is a mission to carry out. You receive that in return. If you're a Christian and you think your faith is defined by gaining more information, by learning more, by memorizing things, and by doing all this stuff, then you've missed the kind of Christianity that Jesus is calling these men to. That is not the sum total of Christianity. To be a follower of Jesus is to be sent on mission. You have a calling. We talked a little bit about dwell, but I also want to talk a little bit about next week and why you should be here next week. Again, we're going to be talking about budget, which sounds awful, which sounds like, can we not have a business meeting that I don't have to come to so that we can talk about that? Like that feels like what should be happening, right? Really don't want to talk about this, but when we talk about budget, it's a lot more than numbers because the budget serves the mission. And we are on a mission here at Providence. And I think you need to be here next year. 2016 will be the year that defines Providence Church. It will define us, who we are and what we do. There's no way around it. There's all kinds of things that are going to be happening, and we're going to be talking about that next week. And so, I want to talk a lot more about this, but I'm going to stop and I'm going to just say you need to be here. So the first two things that we see is that Jesus was sent on mission and that he has a mission for us. And then the third thing that we see, and this is going to be it for us this morning, is that deeds lead to rewards. Deeds lead to rewards. I just wonder, when was the last time you heard that in church? That deeds lead to rewards? If I'm completely honest, I don't know that I've ever heard that. And whenever I first started studying this passage a few weeks ago and thinking through this, I wasn't real comfortable with saying it myself. I mean, this has been beat in my head for so long that sounds unchristian to say. We've been taught as long as we can remember that our best works are as what? Filthy rags, absolutely, right? That's a good Old Testament verse. We've been told our whole life that that's what it is. I mean, that's entry-level Christianity. You can't get to heaven through your good works because they are as filthy rags. So we need Jesus. And I don't want to take away from that any. Our good works will get us nowhere. They do not get us to heaven. Our justification has nothing to do with our good works. It has everything to do with the cross and the cross alone. So that is true. And if you build your salvation on your good works, you will face a judgment that you will not be ready for. For so many of us, that's the way that it works. I mean, there's a good reason for hearing this teaching for so long. Because the vast majority of people out there are living a life that they just hope when they die that their good deeds outweigh their bad ones. Because then they can say they were a good person. And they think that that's how the equation works. And they may or may not want to admit that they are a good or a bad person or where they fall on that scale. And they may or may not want to admit that there's a judgment that comes after, but there's something written on our hearts that tells us that there's something more and that we have to give an account for our actions. We can't just go forever without giving an account. And so you have do-gooders that try everything they can to finish. I talked to a guy I used to work with, a pharmacist I used to work with, and he was Jewish, and he said, I just really hope, and this is what I believe that Judaism has taught him, and he says, I just hope when I die, I can say that I was a good person because I had more good than bad. My heart broke when he said that, because there's no amount of goodness that will get you into heaven. I don't care what it is. There's no amount of goodness. To believe that that's your path to salvation is to follow a path straight to hell. So I want to be as clear as I can about that up front, right? But Jesus says something here that I think we've lost in Christianity, especially in the American church. I think it's lost because I've never heard anybody teach about it. Jesus is not afraid to talk about rewards in the future and what will come for us. He's not afraid to commend our good deeds. He doesn't qualify what he says here. He doesn't say, if you do something good, it's like filthy rags, but you'll get a reward anyway. He says, do something good and you'll receive your reward. It almost sounds unchristian. If it wasn't Jesus saying it, I might say that it was. I mean, but that's what he says. He's not afraid to commend us for our good deeds. And the picture here is someone that's given approval to the voice and to the message of the disciple. This isn't just somebody that, like, hey, random guy walks by and, hey, you look thirsty, let me give you a cup of water, and then all of a sudden, you know, this guy's on his way to heaven. Like, that's not the picture here. The picture is that you've shown hospitality, and in showing hospitality, you buy into this message and you've shown that you're eager to help the cause of Jesus and eager to help his mission. This encouragement and this picture of Jesus, it gives us tremendous encouragement if you pay close attention. I fear that too often we can get hung up on denouncing and minimizing our acts of service. We get hung up on kind of denouncing these things and what we've done. And we really miss out on the full blessing of what it means to do these things. We minimize it because we feel like we can't talk about it. We selflessly serve others, and we selflessly serve other Christians, but we feel like we can't feel good about it because that's just going to get into our pride, and it can. You got to be on guard for that. So you have to be careful. Like, you can't just be like, yeah, look how good I am. I'm the one that did this week, and look, I did set up, and I did nursery, and I taught this, and I did that. Look how great I am. If that's where you're going, then you've missed the point here. But Jesus is clear. God is pleased whenever we serve and care for others, especially when we serve and care for other Christians. I've really never heard that in church. But that's what he says. When you serve other Christians, you are blessed for that. Let's just take a minute and apply that. There is nobody in this room right now, I don't care how tough they think they are, I don't care how independent you think you are, I don't care how great you think you are, there's nobody in this room that doesn't need encouragement. That doesn't need to be told, man, I just appreciate what you're doing. Appreciate how the hard work that you put in. I appreciate what you've done. I appreciate how you've cared for me. I appreciate how you've anything. There's nobody in this room that doesn't need encouragement. Men, your wives need you to be an encourager. And this is in here for me. Like, I'm just going to go sit down here and then listen to that being preached to me, right? That's not my natural bent. I just told you kind of how my family was. Like, my natural bent is set expectations high and then here we go. Like, that's just the way that it works. But men, you need to be an encourager. Women, I don't care what you think about men's egos. They need you to tell them how great they are. Okay? They need to be encouraged. Men need to know that you think that they're great. You need to encourage them. Parents, your kids need to know that you care for them and you need to encourage them. This is in words and in deed. Providence, I want to challenge you this morning to be a more encouraging people, wherever you go. Put aside cynicism and critique. Those things are easy. And I'm telling you that as someone who likes to critique. Critique is easy. Encouragement is not easy. It's not simple. Encourage one another. Hebrews chapter 3 says, "But exhort one another every day, as long as it is called today, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin." Do you see what that says? Exhort one another every day as long as it's called today. I love that. Every day as long as it's called today. What is today? Today is today. So encourage today. That's what it's saying. That none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. Do you realize that you telling someone, hey man, I really appreciate that, that helps you and it helps them defeat sin? How crazy is that? This war of the flesh that we are in, this war that we fight to be more and more Christ-like over and over and over, that we desperately need help with, a simple word of encouragement helps both you and the hearer fight that sin. That's amazing. Of all the things that we talk about being disciplines of the Christian life, we talk about how scripture memory helps you fight sin, and it does. And how Bible study helps you fight sin, and it does. And how accountability helps you fight sin, and it does. When do we say encouraging others helps you fight sin? But it does. A simple word of encouragement. Don't wait. Do it today. Encourage one another. We need it. We all need it. Make it a part of who you are. How awesome would it be known if would it be if Providence was known as a church just full of encouragers? Man, I just love those people at that church. They are so encouraging. Let's be that, Providence. We can do that. We should do that. But even more to the point of what Jesus is saying here, he wants us to be encouraged to care and to love for one another. He tells us that our deeds do matter. I don't think it's helpful for us just to continually tell people that every good deed that we do is just a filthy rag. I don't think that that's helpful. I don't think that's the way the verse in Isaiah works. The verse in Isaiah really has more to do with grandstanding and this kind of look at me and how great I am. I've done these good works so that you can see them and know how great I am. If that's where you're at, then that verse in Isaiah, I think, applies very well. It's not what Jesus is talking about. But he wants his disciples to know that the mission is hard. And when you leave this place, you're going to need people to encourage you and to love on you. And when you're on this mission, you need to know that there's a reward at the end of this path. I mean, if this applies to the person who gives the cup of water to the disciple, how much more does it apply to the disciple? There's a reward at the end. I don't know what you're going through or how hard your life is right now, but if you're living on mission and you are following Christ, there is a reward at the end. And your good deeds that you do as a disciple are not just filthy rags. How would it be if my son, Isaiah, he's in kindergarten, how would it be if he came home, brought home his little artwork that he does, something he did in art, and he handed it to me and I was like, that's just filthy rags. Appreciate it, but that's just not going to cut it, buddy. You got to work on that a little bit. I mean, your artwork's a little bit off right here. You haven't sketched this just right. You got your letters backwards a little bit. You got to get better at this. That's just, really, Isaiah, that's just filthy rags. But that's the view we have of God, right? That everything we do is just bleh, nothing. That's not the view that Jesus pictures here. I think some of us may have gotten to the point in our walk where we just don't see the point. We just can't make Dad happy. Doesn't matter how hard we try to draw the perfect picture, it's not going to be perfect, and it's just going to be filthy rags. And we've gotten to the point where we're just like, what does it matter? What does it matter how good I am? I can try to be good, or I can just kind of try to be good. I'm going to need grace either way. It just doesn't matter. But Jesus says it does matter. I mean, we know the sinfulness of our hearts, and we know we're never going to produce a perfect painting, right? We know it's never going to be perfect. And Jesus does too. And just because we can't do it perfectly doesn't mean that God can't be pleased with us. And it doesn't mean that there isn't a reward at the end of this journey for us. Jesus is encourages these men going out on mission, that their mission matters and that there is a reward at the end of this mission. This morning, I want you to be encouraged. I want you to be encouraged. Parents, it may feel like there's no reward for what you're doing. The endless whining, the dirty diapers, 3 o'clock in the morning, spilt milk, dirty houses. God sees it, and he doesn't think that that's filthy rags. Christian, the meals that you do for others, the note card that you send in the mail, the Facebook message of encouragement, God sees it, and it's not filthy rags. The love note that you write to your spouse, the phone call to your mom and dad to say, hey, I just really appreciate what you've done, the prayers for your pastor and for your elders, God sees it, and that's not filthy rags. The late night counseling sessions, the service projects, the construction projects, the Sundays in the nursery, the Wednesday night with students, God sees that, and it's not filthy rags. Be encouraged. Press on. And know that when God sees you taking a step, He doesn't look at you as like a kid that's trying to walk and be like, come on, you can do better than that. What are you doing falling over after three steps? You can be better than that. Look at Johnny, he can run. This is not what God does. He sees you take a step and He says, all right, you're taking a step, you're walking. Keep walking, keep doing it. And if you fall, just know there's grace. Get up and let's go again. Keep walking. Be encouraged, Providence. Don't misunderstand. That stuff's not going to save you. It won't even get you close. But God is pleased with it. And you will be rewarded for it. So take heart. This mission that we've been sent on is not in vain. It's not done alone. And your deeds are not in secret, even if you try to make them be. Jesus went on mission before us. And He calls us to follow His lead. And we respond to this for our pleasure and for His. We're called to glorify God in our actions. Ephesians chapter 2 says, for we are His workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. As you leave this morning, there's good works waiting for you out there. Walk in them. Will you pray with me? Father, thank You this morning that something as simple as a cup of cold water brings You pleasure. Thank You that we have the opportunity to encourage one another so long as it's called today, because You have given us this day. So we'll rejoice in this day, we'll be glad in this day, and we will encourage today. Father, help us to be people that love You and love others. Help us to be people that feel Your pleasure when we love and when we serve. Help us to be people that know You better because we've died to ourselves, taken up our cross, and followed You all the way to the end and found our reward, which is true joy, salvation, and You. May that be our story. Help us to walk in those good works You've prepared for us. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.